Hi, I'm Lena.
And I'm Aman.
And this is Grounded Geeks,
where we make the geek world relevant, usually.
It's the most wonderful time of the year. Do you want to know why, Aman? Do you want to know why?
Why? Why? Why
because
is it the most wonderful time of the year?
It's the holidays, and the holidays means we have to do an episode about Lord of the Rings. Best trilogy ever.
What?
Ever.
I don't disagree with that statement, but what's the connection?
Because they came out in December. The movies always came out in December. From 2001 to 2003. Yes, it was always December. So I always associate the holidays with them.
they weren't summer releases?
No, Aman. I don't think they were. Wait, let me double check this. I'm pretty sure it was December. Ooh, I really hope I'm right. Okay. Fellowship of the Ring. Lord of the Rings. Fellowship of the Ring. Where do I find this? Hold on.
Wikipedia is a great spot.
That's true. Why am I going through IMDb? Okay, this is too hard. Sorry. Lord of the Rings release dates. Okay, yeah. December 19th, 2001 was Fellowship of the Ring.
Okay.
Two Towers release date. December 18th, 2002. Okay.
Okay.
Return of the King release date. Hello? Where is it?
Hello?
December 17th, 2003. See?
All right. Fine.
It is
fine.
A holiday trilogy. Okay. And
okay.
I'm pretty sure lots of people who are like uber Lord of the Rings fans slash nerds slash geeks, like pretty regularly have a Lord of the Rings marathon viewing during the holidays.
I just thought it was because that's when people had more time. I mean, I've done that plenty of times myself, but I don't know. I completely forgot they came out in December.
Yeah, it was always in December. I know. I don't know why I'm thinking also summer now, too. I feel like there was one year when... Anyway, it doesn't matter. Okay, they're the best movies ever. Let's talk about them. So I love Lord of the Rings. I love them a lot. I love them so much that when I was in high school, like regularly, my Friday nights were not only watching the extended versions of the movies, but watching all of the behind the scenes interviews on the extended DVDs.
Oh yeah. We bought the box set, the extended edition DVD box set. And we watched all
which is hilarious
that.
Because like, I don't think either of us own a DVD player now, but
not anymore.
Yeah.
But those boxes are very pretty.
They're very pretty.
Them.
Oh yeah.
We still have them.
We're never giving those away.
I remember when the third movie came out, my friend and I in high school, we watched the movies back to back, and then the next morning
you
went to go
saw
see
it
them
in theaters, right?
And it was amazing.
I remember I saw the third movie at least twice in theaters, and the first time this happened spontaneously, and the second time I planned this. But the first time in Return of the King, when Lord Denethor is like looking out over his balcony from Minas Tirith and seeing the orc armies coming after them, then he was like, give up, surrender, oh my god, we're all gonna die.
Flee!
And then Gandalf just like swings his staff and knocks him out, and he was like, shut up, man. And the first time I saw it in theaters, I spontaneously started clapping. And then the whole theater joined me.
Everybody started clapping.
And then the second time, I went with you. And then I think we went with two other friends. And I told you guys ahead of time. I was like, there's going to be a moment where I'm going to start clapping. And I need you to do it with me. Okay. And then you guys did. And then again, the whole theater started clapping. And
It was a moment. It was a beautiful moment. I remember that. Yeah.
It was great. It was awesome. I was so excited about that. Probably like highlight of my life at that point. So,
if I remember correctly, you love these movies so much. You picked your major in college because of it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I decided to study film and video production in college because of Lord of the Rings. Which was just so, I remember, I truly remember one moment where I was watching the behind the scenes interviews, and Peter Jackson was talking about like what it took to bring Middle Earth to life and bring the whole Lord of the Rings universe to life. And I was like emotional watching that interview. I was like, he really did it. He did it. He brought it to life. And I was like, I want to bring worlds to life and whatever. Anyway, so yeah, that's how I got my start in not really film, but like in media and communications and stuff. So yeah, that's how much I love. I literally have memorized every scene in this trilogy of the extended versions. And I've memorized all the interviews.
So Lena, did you read the books before you saw these movies?
No, but when I saw the first movie, and I remember.
So what you made you excited to see the movies?
Wait, let me tell you, you did. Okay. It was you. Duh. Oh, okay. I think the first Harry Potter movie had come out, right? Like now I got to look up the release date for Harry Potter. I'm sorry.
I feel like we should have looked up this stuff before we started recording.
It's fine. It's fine. Okay. Everything's fine. What was it called? Sorcerer's Stone. Okay, so Harry Potter had literally come out 1 month before the first Lord of the Rings movie.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, man, it's so amazing. You know, obviously I'd read all the, at that Harry point, Potter all the Harry books. Potter books. Yeah. And then you were like, Lena, you need to watch this movie called Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring. And I was like, what is this? And then I remember while we were watching it together.
Uh-huh.
Because I think at that point, I don't think I saw the first one in theaters. Because I didn't know what it was. And I feel like we had gotten the DVD and then we're watching at home. And I had a million questions for you. And I kept asking you questions like every 2 minutes. And then at the end of the movie, you were like, can you read the fucking book? Like, just read it. Okay. And so then I started reading the books and I read all of them then. So yeah. So I did read the others before watching the other movies.
To be honest, until you said that right before we started recording, I was still in the back of my mind being wondering, did she or did she not read the books? I can't remember.
Wow, man. Yes, I read them. I do okay. think I should reread them because like my 12-year-old brain did not really understand a lot of it. There's just like so much Tolkien, bless his heart. There's just so much detail. It's like they're like textbooks, some parts of those books.
Oh, yeah.
Like very Absolutely. Much so. We were just talking. So recently, some friends and I, we got together and we watched the first Lord of the Rings movie. And well, we will continue the marathon at a future point. But we were talking about how like he'll be like, and then Gimli picked up his axe. And then the next five paragraphs would be about like the history of axes in Middle Earth or something.
The history of that axe, not even axes.
Yeah.
That axe.
That's true.
The history of that axe.
So, yeah. I mean, so like good for Tolkien, like really helped shape the world a lot. I think that's what helped the filmmakers bring this world to life. I think so, by getting that extra context.
So it's not just that, at least for me, when I read the Lord of the Rings, that was my first real understanding of what it takes to do world building. Mm-hmm. Because when you watch the movies, all right, they obviously don't cover the textbooks part of those novels.
That would be a documentary series then.
Because then that's a documentary series and nobody wants to watch that shit. But the thing is, when you're watching the movies, it still feels very rich. Mm-hmm. And I genuinely believe that it's because all of this other history was written. Like Tolkien developed all of it, you know?
Yeah.
Whether you know it or not, you still feel that it is there and it's what gives the world depth, even if you don't know it specifically, you know? Like the language of the elves, you know? Mm-hmm. Elvish, I guess.
Yes, elvish.
The thing is that like he actually developed a script for it. You know, like the novels, when you just read the novels, you get that feeling that this is a very real language, but you don't know why you feel like it's a real language, you know, but you feel it anyways. And it's because he actually did the work to develop a language from scratch, mm-hmm. you know, and that's why you feel that it is a real language with history and a script, et cetera, and blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. And that, at least for me, was my first real taste of true world building.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. There's this great YouTube channel called Hello Future Me. And the guy who runs it, he talks a lot about world building in a lot of different fantasy worlds and whatnot. And he does a really good job of covering, of explaining it. If you want to try to learn more about the world building of fantasy worlds, mm-hmm. you know, that's a great YouTube channel to check out.
Yeah. We will link to that in our show notes.
Yes. We needed to have something to link to this week.
Oh, there's lots of things I can link to, like many Lord of the Rings memes that have developed in the last 20 years. Can you believe it's been 20 years since it came out? Like the first movie.
Oh my God. When did we become so old that we are now measuring things in our past in decades?
I don't know. I don't want to think about it. It's too depressing. Yeah. Anyway, prior to this conversation, we were also talking about how Tolkien. So, okay, did you ever see the movie about Tolkien starring Nicholas Holt?
I did not.
It was pretty good. I watched it on a plane. So, you know, anything on a plane is far more entertaining than it would be otherwise.
That's true. So, you watch the crappiest shit on an airplane. You're I kind of enjoyed that.
Right. Yeah. No, this was really good. It was interesting. I didn't actually know that much about his life in general. Mm-hmm. I'm sure parts of it were obviously embellished a little bit and it's not like 1000% accurate, but yeah. So, I mean, I did not realize like how much obviously of an influence World War I would have had on Tolkien. Yep. I think anyone who lived through World War I, just like anyone right now who's living through this stupid pandemic, you know, their life is going to be shaped by,
yes,
by, you know, like your whole perspective of the world, yeah, you know, forever, we're going to be kind of changed by this.
Our imaginations are affected by the events that happen in our lives.
Exactly. And he actually like fought in World War I too. He wasn't just some, yes, bystander, you know? So that had a huge impact on him. And I think, you know, we can see that in just the major themes of Lord of the Rings, which is the biggest one is, of course, good versus evil. And
yes,
that is what I think many, many people who fought in World War I and World War II were kind, mm-hmm, of like believing that, like, this is a fight of good versus evil. And
yeah, I mean, with a war that big, you have to believe that. That's, mm-hmm, the thing. You have to believe that to fight in it. And World War I was a particularly brutal war. I mean, it was the whole trench warfare that existed in World War I is probably amongst the most brutal in history, you know, because the weapons in World War I became very, very advanced, mm-hmm, but the tactics had not become as advanced. You know, trench warfare is a very old tactic, which super useful, super helpful when you're fighting with muskets and, you know, bow and arrow and,
right,
crap like that. But, mm-hmm, with World War I, you had very accurate rifles, and literally you would, the way trench warfare worked is that a bunch of the guys would get up and charge towards the other side, mm-hmm, almost guaranteed to die.
Yeah.
So that the people behind them could then actually attack the enemy's trench and take it over.
Yeah.
I mean, it was really, truly a brutal, brutal war. I mean, mm-hmm, one of the reasons that the French lost to Germany during World War II so quickly is because France had lost an entire generation of young men during, mm-hmm, World War I. They literally, yeah, didn't have the soldiers. I think it was like, I mean, there's like a million young men that had died, yeah, in World War, mm-hmm, I. I mean, it was insane. The numbers are,
yeah,
astonishing. And World War I also had, I think, I mean, that was the first war that involved airplanes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. At all. Mm-hmm. And you still had people riding on horseback.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, weird. This was an era of what we would now, looking back, consider, you know, a transition period between the old technologies and ways of conducting war and the new ones. And the mix of that is particularly brutal, mm-hmm. you know? So for somebody who's actually fighting in the trenches in World War One, like Tolkien had, mm-hmm. the kind of horror that you see there's just no way that that isn't going to impact the way you view things. And even the escapism that Tolkien was partaking in was still strongly, strongly influenced by the trauma that he was experiencing.
Yeah. It was definitely like a defense mechanism for him, I think.
Oh yeah.
At that point, it was sort of a way to kind of maintain sanity. And it's like, what is that movie called? Life is Beautiful, the Italian mm-hmm. movie. Have you, you've seen it, right?
I have not actually.
What? Okay. Well, the whole premise of the movie is that this father and his son who are Jewish, you know, they get taken to, it's during World War II, they get taken to a concentration camp and all that. And the son is like 5 or 6 years old. And the father, this whole time, to protect his son's mind, basically, he mm-hmm. tells his son, oh no, we're all just playing a game right now. And, you know, we have to do different things to get points. So like he makes his son believe that like, they're just playing a game, you know, like it's not, this isn't something bad, you know, like, and he makes up like these excuses for anything that happens in the concentration camp, like the whole time. And so, yeah, that's kind of what it reminded me of just now, that like, this was a way for Tolkien to protect his own mind almost, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm sure the PTSD that he suffered from and the trauma and all that. So, but yeah.
Or as they used to call it back in those days, shell shock.
Yeah. That's right. It's so weird. You said that like it was a commercial. You're so weird.
I didn't even realize I was doing that.
God. Anyway, what else did I want to talk about? Okay, so like the one and only criticism that I have about the movies.
You shut up right now.
Oh, stop it.
You know, there's want to hear it.
There's just one and you're going to agree with me. Okay. And I think Peter Jackson agrees with me too now. Okay. Like I'm pretty sure he's like, oh, I fucked up on this, you know, but why in a made up fantasy world are there still only white people? Like why?
Yeah.
Like it was dumb. Okay. That was dumb. I was like, really? And okay. But by the way, there are people of color in the Lord of the Rings movies and they're all orcs.
Yeah,
it's bad. It's a bad look.
It is aggravating, especially when you read the books more carefully. And Tolkien does describe different races.
Yeah.
You know, when he's describing the world of the hobbits, you know, I can't remember if this is, I think this is actually in The Hobbit, though, not in the Lord of the Rings trilogy. Mm-hmm. But he's like, the hobbits over here look like this. The hobbits over there have darker skin and things like that. Like he actually does describe a very, very diverse world. I think the only exception to that is probably the elves.
Yeah, the elves are all fair skin, glowing, whatever.
Fair skin, golden hair. And it's like, why is the standard of beauty?
I know. Bullshit.
Norway?
Really. Yeah. Yeah. And the thing is, and with when it came to the Hobbits, Peter Jackson was just like, cool, we'll make them white with curly hair. That's it. And I was like, which by the way, he definitely tries to reconcile that a tiny bit with the Hobbit movies that he made. You can see now in like the village scenes of different places. Right. Like there's like a couple black people there and an Asian lady there. And you're like, okay, so none of them, all the main characters are still white, but whatever. So anyway, that's my only issue with it. And that's not even an issue with the Lord of the Rings story, the original books or anything. That's my issue with how filmmakers choose to, you know, interpret these stories that are meant to be for everyone and universal. And
it's actually a narrowness of the imagination of the world that we live in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you live in a world where you are only surrounded by a homogenous group of people, or where every story that you hear fits within that homogeneity, then your imagination will also be limited by that. And I think at the core of it, that is one of the biggest reasons that diversity and representation is so important mm-hmm. in fictional media, because the lack of it stunts our imaginations and our ability to think more broadly.
Yes, completely agree. Well said, Aman. Clap, clap, clap.
Thank you. I should turn that into an essay and submit it to a newspaper or something.
You should. You totally should. Oh my gosh.
You know. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. All right.
Can we go into random fun facts about Lord of the Rings?
Sure. Okay. Yeah. Go. What's your fun fact?
I have two fun facts. Mm-hmm. First is, do you remember, and I think it was in The Return of the King, when Saruman gets stabbed?
Yes. I know this fact of mine because I watch all the behind the scenes interviews, but go on.
Yes.
Share it with the audience.
You know what? You tell it.
No, please.
Because I'm pretty sure you're not going to know the next one.
No. I have my own fact I'm going to share. So please.
Okay.
After you.
So Christopher Lee, may he rest in peace, actor, SAS officer, all around badass Dracula, and also Count Dooku, total badass. Mm-hmm. He played Count Dooku in the Star Wars prequels. And he was also a special air services person. People would ask him like, oh, do you have any stories about your time in the SAS? He would say, can you keep a secret? Mm-hmm. And they'd say, yes. And he'd go, so can I. And that would be the end of the conversation. So
Wrecked.
This is a guy who is a badass. For reals, a badass. Mm-hmm. And Peter Jackson, you know, being a director, he's like, okay, so when he stabs you with the fake knife, you know, act like you're getting stabbed, like, you know, like make a big show of it. And Christopher is just like, oh, no. That's not what happens when you get stabbed in the back. You actually are shocked, go into shock and are gasping for breath. So that scene where Christopher Lee is getting stabbed, that is him not acting. That is him recreating some point in time in the past when he was stabbed in the back.
Yep.
Literally.
That's right. So Christopher Lee knew what it felt like to be stabbed.
Yes.
Yep. Knew that one. What's your next one?
No. You will trade off.
My cute fun fact is in the Fellowship of the Ring, at one point, you know, when they're walking, because that's all that happens in the Fellowship of the Ring. So at one point they're walking up a mountain, the snow-covered mountain and all. So apparently Sean Bean, the actor who plays Boromir.
The actor who dies in every movie he's in. Who
dies in every movie, but is alive in real life. He has like a fear of heights or something like that, or a fear of helicopters, something like that. And so while the rest of the cast took helicopters to the top of the mountain to film that scene, he was like, I'm good, guys. I'm just going to hike up this mountain and meet you there. And he started hours earlier and was there and did this very like emotional scene where he's holding the ring and talking about its power and blah, 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 blah.
Wow.
And apparently Viggo Mortensen afterwards was like, dude, like that was such a good scene. How did you do that? I know you're afraid of heights and we're on this mountain. Like, how are you able to concentrate? And he was like, oh no, I was scared shitless the entire time and thinking about the mountain the entire time. So yeah. That's my fun fact. In case you didn't love Sean Bean enough, here's more reason to love him.
Sorry. Yeah. So the fun fact that I was going to share, although your fun fact did remind me of another fun fact.
Oh my God. Okay.
which you probably know that one. So Tolkien actually changed the English language. All right.
Interesting.
So he was a professor of Old English at Oxford University. Mm-hmm. One of the effects that had was that his editors did not want to change anything that he wrote. So the result of that was that the plural of dwarf that Tolkien used was dwarves.
Yeah.
At the time, that was not the correct plural for the word dwarf.
Oh, snap. The
actual plural for the word dwarf is dwaro.
The fuck? Sorry.
English is a weird fucking language.
It is but really weird.
Anyways, his editors didn't want to correct him because they were like, I guess he's right. Like, who would we check that with? We'd probably go to Tolkien if this was anybody else. So we are not going to correct him. However,
that's hilarious.
Tolkien realized his own mistake and still worked the word Dwaro into his books. And that's why one of the kingdoms or whatever of the dwarves or the cities is called Dwarodelph.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. I love that. And that's a good fact of mine. Good one.
Yeah. And because of that and that alone, the correct plural for the word dwarf is now dwarves.
Well done. It makes more sense. So thank you, Tolkien.
Well, nice. You know, English borrows from different languages and Latin plurals versus Greek origin word plurals. Like that's why the plural for the word medium is media, you know, and not mediums.
Yeah.
All right. It's a similar type of thing with dwarf where I can't remember what the origin of the word is, but the plural of it is actually dwaro and not dwarves.
That's hilarious.
Or at least it was, because English is an ever evolving language. So
right
now it's perfectly correct to say dwarves.
Interesting. Wow. Wow. Cool. All right. Well,
so do you want to share the fun fact about when Viggo Mortensen broke his foot?
Oh yes. Okay. So in the Two Towers, this is great because now we have a fact from each movie. So in the Two Towers, there's this epic scene where Aragorn, Legolas, and Gimli are running. Two Towers is all about running. Fellowship is about walking. Yes. they're running, trying to catch up with the orcs who's kidnapped Merry and Pippin and trying to find them. And then they come across a huge pile of dead orc bodies and just dead and burning. And they thought Merry and Pippin were dead among them. And then Aragorn, out of anguish and rage, he kicks one of the helmets of the orcs away. And it's such a perfect shot because it's like the camera's on him. He kicks it and the helmet kind of goes flying past the camera. And in that moment, he screams with rage. And apparently that's right when he broke his toe or his foot or something when he kicked it. Yeah, but he used it as an acting moment.
they did that shot a million times, apparently, because it just like Peter Jackson, I guess, just didn't feel it.
And that was the last one.
And that was the last one. And they shot it and he was like, oh, that's the one. Yeah. And turns out that was the one because the rage was due to broken foot.
Yeah. And Viggo was like, great. Really glad that was the one because I broke my foot. So now I have to go to the hospital anyway. So yeah, that's a fun fact for you. And
I guess this is just a random gushing. This, like, we don't actually have a topic.
I've just literally been wanting, hey, we talked about a lot of things. We talked about World War One. We talked about the English language. We talked about representation in movies and the importance of representation.
That's true. But we didn't have a plan.
Fantasy.
We didn't have a plan.
Come on. When do we have a plan? We never have a plan.
I mean, sometimes we have a plan.
Sometimes you have bullet points. I never have a plan. So I'm being real with you.
I do come up. I do bullet point out some of our stuff.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. We're good, I think, on this.
Yeah. I guess the one last thing I want to say is that The Lord of the Rings is just still always going to be near and dear to my heart, no matter how old it gets.
Always.
Because forever. So much of the special effects were just real, straight makeup, real sets, and a more advanced version of the special effects tactics that were used in Star Wars.
Yes.
Which is to actually make the damn thing that you're shooting, like Minas Tirith, you know, they built it, like they built a, what they called bigatures, you know? So very, very detailed and everything, like sculptors making this walled city and they actually shot that, you know, it's not a CGI set.
Yeah.
And CGI is always going to have some limitations, I think, you know, where every few years down the road, whatever happened a few years before is going to look old. But if it's real, it's never going to look old.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, of course, doing real life things has its own limitations. Like you can only have so much money and time and labor.
That's true. So. That's true. There was a whole thing we could have gone into this about Lord of the Rings, you know, New Line Cinema just being like, you know what? let's make this three movies and we're just going to fund all of it.
Yeah.
Just make that big bet.
Throw money at you, Peter.
As opposed to what happened with Warner and Dune, you know, where they're like talking to Denis Villeneuve. I'm going to hurt myself. They're just like, you know what? Why don't you make part one? We'll see how it goes. And then see if we can fund part two. Granted, Dune was a little bit weird, though, because of the previous failed attempts at making that.
Right. Anyway. All right. Well, I think we've covered it.
I think so, too.
And we'll probably do like another Lord of the Rings episode gushing on it next year or something, because I think this should be an annual thing.
Probably. Or we pick some other thing. I don't know.
Anyway, we'll figure it out.
We'll see.
As always, thank you for listening to Grounded Geeks.
And happy holidays, everyone. It's the most wonderful time.